This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, there is a major trial taking place at the Special Criminal Court. This is a non-jury court presided over by three judges. The accused man is Jerry Hutch, otherwise known or often known as the Monk. The charge is that he murdered David Byrne, who was a member of the Kinahan gang cartel. And this murder took place at the Regency Hotel in 2016, the 5th of February, I think, 2016. And it subsequently led to a violent feud between the Hutch and Kinahan gangs. 18 people so far have died as a result of that feud. Some of them innocent people on the Hutch side, but there's never been anything like it in gangland in Ireland. And the trial is now going on, as I say, in the Special Criminal Court. Jerry Hutch has two co-accused, Paul Murphy and Jason Bonney, who are accused of participating or contributing to the murder of David Byrne. We're joined now by Sean Murray. Sean has been covering this for his newspaper, The Examiner. I have to say his work is really exemplary. It's brilliant stuff. And this is an amazing and very important trial. Sean, thank you very much for joining us again to bring us up to date. An extraordinary week last week because two things had happened. The guards had put a tracker on a car driven by Jonathan Dowdall, in which he was taking Jerry Hutch to the north. Dowdall was a former Sinn Féin councillor, and he and his father, Patrick, were facing charges connected to this murder because his father, Patrick, had booked a hotel room at the Regency Hotel the night before the Boxing weigh-in when this slaughter took place. But they are now serving 4.5-year jail sentences, but not for the charge of murder. And there is talk of them entering the witness protection program, which seems likely they will do. Sean, this is a remarkable case. And first of all, tell us about the tracker. The guards claimed Kieran Hoey was the witness. He's in charge of surveillance in a Garda Síochána. He gave evidence of how the tracker had been lost and the contents or whatever was on it. Brendan Graham is defending counsel here, and he gave Kieran Hoey a torrid time. It was lost, Hoey said, and destroyed, and he authorized it. Now, all of a sudden last week, it was found. Can you tell us the story behind that?
Yeah, Eamon, it was an extraordinary start to an extraordinary week, I think, in the criminal courts of justice. So it started on the back of what had been a pretty rough week for the prosecution, because as you said, it was heard in court that all the details, all the data related to this tracking device that had been put on Jonathan Dowdall's car when he and the Monk Hutch had gone up north, this data had been destroyed just earlier this year. Brendan Gretton, who's Hutch's counsel, he was going very hell for leather on this point. He said it was disturbing. He put, as you said, Howie threw the ringer on the stand. And
he said something that is unusual. He said it's hard to understand how this could have been destroyed, quote, in good faith, close quote. So in other words, that's saying that he didn't think this was done decently, honourably.
And obviously, that's a core part of the defence's case, as we had heard up to then. And it was part of the defence's case that if the guards had put a tracker on Dowdall's car and used that to track his and the monk's movements in the north, that would be outside of this jurisdiction and illegal. Now, the guards, on the other hand, said they would routinely not keep these records indefinitely. And they did do it indeed in good faith because they were relying on a plethora of other evidence, such as the testimony of surveillance guards who followed Hutch and Dowdall while they were in this jurisdiction. But whatever way you looked at it, it still seemed on the face of it to look very bad for the prosecution that these records had been earmarked for destruction.
Now, especially when it was known when they were destroyed that this trial was going to take place.
Exactly. It happened earlier this year. And what we've heard now is that the current head of the National Surveillance Unit, Detective Superintendent Lynch, and we had Assistant Commissioner Orla McPartlin also give evidence, and was put to them, if you had been in charge of whether or not to destroy these documents, would you have? And they said, no, we wouldn't have. So obviously, again, that's another aspect that didn't look great from that perspective. But in the background, while this was playing out in court, I think a big operation was conducted at Garda HQ to see whether or not they could try and find these documents, if there was some kind of backup, if there was some other place that these records were kept. And then lo and behold, in court last Monday, it began with Sean Gillan, who's the chief prosecutor, senior counsel. He was telling us that these records had been found. So what happened was Gardaí brought their cybercrime colleagues in to have a look. They looked at the server that the records had originally been on. They said, here, look, it could take weeks, if not months, to get it this way. So where they found it was they had a look at some PCs, some laptops that were on the list to be destroyed. And then, as I said, lo and behold, on the third one that they checked, here were all these records about that tracker. And as Brendan Gren put it, what's lost has now been found.
Right. Is that an entirely credible explanation? Or
Brendan Gren said that the manner in which it had been discovered raised more questions, in that once the questions had begun to be asked about how these records were destroyed, suddenly, in his words, they were found again. But I did feel it was good for the prosecution to be able to show that these records still existed,
yes,
that they were able to produce them. And if there is a query about what exactly is on the records, at least that they're there now and it can be heard out in court rather than destroyed and unobtainable, as it were.
Now, Miss Justice Tara Burns is the senior of the three judges presiding, and she decided that the bug and the recording, which is about 9 or 10 hours, I think, of a trip that Dowdall took with the monk to the north, that they should be, I think Brendan Graham tried to get this stuff out and not played, but she decided that she would hear the arguments for this being admissible or not after the court had listened to all of the tapes. And that's really what last week was about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a curious situation where for 3 days straight, we heard at great length the details of the conversations between the monk Hutch and Jonathan Dowdall on their trip up north. They go north on the M1 via Newry. They go to Lisburn and Belfast and then to Strabane. So it's a very long trip that they go on. And so many topics were traversed over the course of that conversation. But what's interesting is, even after hearing all of this, it might not actually be admissible to the court when it's making its decision on whether or not the monk is guilty of the murder of David Bourne. So a lot of the things that we heard, a lot of them were in Northern Ireland, and that's the crucial point that the defence is fighting.
But, yes, and because they're inadmissible, if the recordings were made, or if bugs are, or trackers are put on vehicles, they are inadmissible, or the evidence they produce is inadmissible if they go outside of this jurisdiction.
Well, obviously the defense is definitely putting that point across, and they did it very forcefully, I think, all day on Friday about why the evidence shouldn't be admissible. Now, today we're going to hear the other side. We're going to hear from Sean Galan for the prosecution on why it should be admissible. And I think obviously we will go into it in depth in a minute, but it's hard to overemphasize the importance of the recordings for the prosecution's case. It's been referred to by the prosecution as one of the cores of their case. And you can see why it's a battle that they feel like they have to win to have these recordings admitted into evidence.
Yeah, we'll just get into what's on the recordings in a moment, Sean. But Brendan Graham, or somebody said, I think you said actually in a piece you wrote, that if this was a jury trial, it's highly likely that these tapes would have been deemed inadmissible. Didn't you feel that? Because there is a difference, isn't there, between the Special Criminal Court, which has always been controversial. I, for example, would have been a supporter of it at a certain time and not at other times, but because it has enormous powers. But sometimes to prevent witnesses or jurors being intimidated or whatever, you can see the case for it. But given that it's a strong case, but it has to be whiter than white, doesn't it? It has to be cleaner than clean.
Absolutely. And I think this case, maybe more than any others that have come before, it will really put a spotlight on the role of the Special Criminal Court and what it can and can't do and the limits thereof. In a jury trial, for example, the jury might not have gotten to hear any of this evidence at all if it was eventually ruled inadmissible. So we wouldn't have heard any of the recordings that we did hear. Now, the judges obviously heard the recordings and could eventually rule it inadmissible. But for the media and for the public at large, the cat's out of the bag, as it were, on this, because we have heard what is on them.
Yeah, now, Dowdall, one has to say, Jonathan Dowdall does most of the talking. And he's what we used to call in Dublin a mouth. He's got a lot to say.
He does. He has an awful lot to say. I would say that it's fair to say he does most of the talking during the like 7-8 odd hours of the conversations that we've heard. Like, it's very rare that a silence will last more than a few minutes. And when that silence is broken, it's frequently Jonathan Dowdall who's doing the breaking of the silence.
Yes.
He's very keen on getting the monk's take on a variety of topics. He refers to him as Gerard at all times rather than Jerry. Nothing seems to be off limits when it comes to what they talk about. He talks to him about explosives, about Sinn Féin, about the Kinahans, about the IRA, about Imelda May gets a mention at one point because the monk quite likes her singing. So the amount of topics that were traversed, it only had come a few weeks after the 2016 general election. So they talk politics at one point about how Sinn Féin shouldn't go in with Fine Gael, which I think those kind of political topics are still happening today. But I think aside from the substantive parts that are relevant to the prosecution's case, there are bits that maybe caused raised eyebrows among listeners like myself and even got a laugh at some stages out of the monk. So. Yeah. At one stage, they're chatting about media coverage of the Hutch Kinahan feud, and they're referencing the alleged price that had been put on Jerry Hutch's head by the Kinahans at this point. So it was quite surreal to sit in court, look at Jerry the Monk Hutch, laugh at his own reference to himself as the $1 million man. So yeah. He's laughing in court as the pair laugh on the recording from nearly 7 years ago. So it was a very surreal moment.
Yeah, and there's also, Dowdall also is highly critical of Mary Lou MacDonald for not attending the funeral of Neddy Hutch, that's Eddie Hutch, who I think 3 days after the Regency murder of David Byrne, he was the first person that revenge was taken on. He was an entirely innocent man. I think he was a taxi driver. Dowdall is very critical of Mary Lou MacDonald for not going to his funeral. Now, I'm not in any way suggesting or trying to in any way tarnish Marilyn McDonald or Sinn Féin, because Dowdle had been a Sinn Féin councillor and was no longer. But that's just him melting off again, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think there's two kind of really important times that Sinn Féin are brought up, and this is one of them. So, yeah, as you say, Neddy Hutch, who was a taxi driver and not involved in criminality at all, he was killed just a few days after the Regency shooting. And it was widely termed a revenge attack. And Dowdle really goes for Mary Lou in the recordings over not having gone to the funeral. He claims that Mary Lou went on TV the night that Neddy got shot and branded everyone as, quote, scumbags. This is the quote that's gotten a lot of traction, I think, in the media in the last few days. But Dowdle says, but yous were good enough to use Gerard for votes. Yous were good enough to use for money. And Dowdle says it's in her area, which obviously it's in her constituency that this shooting had happened, and that she was sticking her head in the sand on it. And he said that will bite her in future. So it's obviously it's got a lot of traction. But I think it's also important to remember, first of all, Mary Lou, she went on BBC Northern Ireland yesterday and she refuted what's being suggested by Dowdle in these recordings. And then, again, these two men didn't know they were recorded. Maybe Dowdle had an axe to grind over his Sinn Féin past. So it's important to read it through that lens, I think.
Yes.
But regardless of that, I think Mary Lou and Sinn Féin will be asked questions about this, I think, in one way or another in the next few weeks and months.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now, in general, there's, I think it was 9 or 10 hours of recordings. Over the week, Sean, I think you said in your copy in the Examiner that Gerry Hutch, the monk, was cagey. And he didn't do half as much talking or even quarter as much as Dowdle. But he didn't. There's no smoking gun in it, is there?
No, absolutely not.
I read all the transcripts and I found them as interesting and amusing and, you know, in places. But I didn't hear anything about a smoking gun or that could be construed to be a smoking gun.
Absolutely, yeah. At no stage does Gerry Hutch tell Dowdle anything to the effect of it was me or I was involved in the Regency or anything to that effect. It's hard to tell what his relationship with Dowdle was at that point. Obviously, he was relying on Dowdle to bring him to the north to facilitate this meeting with Republicans to try and broker a peace deal with the Kinahans at that time. But he's also
I think that emerges clearly, Sean, that Hutch believes that this is going to escalate and it's gone. Nobody's going to. There's no winner here, And he thinks that Republicans could broker a peace and that they may have the sort of, I suppose, they're heavy enough to impress the Kinnahans or to maybe even encourage or intimidate the Kinnahans, who appear to be the more militant of the two. Hutch is looking for peace. The Kinnahans don't appear to be.
Yeah, at that time, it appears that Hutch was very aware of the possibility for escalation. And as we know, unfortunately, it did escalate and there were more deaths as a result of this feud. Yeah. I think the impression is given that there's a general belief, especially from Dowdle as well, that these Republicans that they're going to meet have a degree of clout, that they will be able to maybe facilitate a coming together with the Kinnahans that would not be possible directly. Like, reference is made that from Hutch that if you send someone to the Kinnahans, it's the messenger that gets it. So it's too risky to even try and meet with them at all. So the Republicans will be that kind of essential go-between.
Yes. And also you write, and it's very well written, about the language. The C word you were counting was uttered at least 41 times in this conversation in the car, and the F or effing word was used at least 86 times in that course of that journey. So, and you describe in the Examiner Hutch sitting in the courtroom, appearing to be enjoying himself, smiling serenely, you write, and laughing at various points. He particularly seemed to enjoy listening to himself as the million-dollar man, in reference to the bounty that was on his head from the Kinnahans.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another point where there's a particular Republican contact that they're going to meet up north, and he has the nickname Fish. And the monk also seemed to enjoy his description of him as being after a Blue Peter badge. And there was a big fish head on him. I don't know who this man is, but they were talking about him in those kind of terms. And it's funny, every time the monk cracks a joke, there's joking over between the two men on the recording. But it traverses so many topics. Like, I think there was a couple of points that really stuck out to me as well. There was one sentence uttered that started with, "All the same, if the cops are following us, you would know like a light." Now, this is what Jonathan Dowdle says on a trip up north where the Gardaí had tracked and bogged his vehicle.
Yeah, yes.
There seems to be a general lack of awareness at the, Mr. Hutch is guilty of it as well at one point, of the depth of surveillance that was being done on these men at the time.
Yeah.
At another point, Dowdle is really keen to emphasize his loyalty to Hutch. He says, "I know you bleed and trust me." And then in another part, he says, kind of out of the blue, "I'm with you to the bleeding death, Gerard."
Yeah.
And obviously, given what we know about Dowdle now turning state witness, it's a sentence that obviously, with hindsight, many years on, it's tinged with that kind of irony.
Indeed, I think a lot of people are looking forward to, I think it's possibly at the end of this week that Mr. Dowdle will have to go into the witness box and be cross-examined by Brendan Graham, who's representing Jerry Hutch. There's also reference in the tapes on a number of occasions to the yokes. Quote, "The yokes, of course, are, I assume, the weapons. And there were some heavy-duty AK-47s taken into the Regency."
Absolutely, yeah. And as you said to me before, like, there's no smoking gun, as it were, from Hutch. But I think what the prosecution is hoping to make allusions to is the kind of tangential comments that they make. And obviously, these three yokes are a central part of that. So they say that the three yokes are the assault rifles that were used in the Regency shooting. And at a couple of times in the recording, Hutch references the fact that they're going to give the three yokes as a present to the Republicans as a kind of thank you or whatever else to broker this meeting with the Kinnahans. And he wants to get the three yokes out of here as quickly as possible. So obviously, if the prosecution's case is that Hutch was aware of the location of the three AK-47s, or he was aware of them being handed over to the IRA, because bear in mind, this conversation that was recorded happened on the 7th of March. 2 days later, on the 9th, Gardaí stopped a car outside Slane in County Meath, and in the boot of that car were these three AK-47s, the three yokes that were used in the Regency, and the man who was driving the car was jailed for both possession of those guns and for IRA membership. So the references to the yokes, I think, are important in the overall context of the case.
Yes, and I mean, the other thing that's fascinating is Hutch's reference to the Kinahan cartel and the Kinahans and what they aspire to in terms of controlling and being big and being international and being obsessed with money.
Yeah, absolutely. He talks about the Kinahans at length at various points about it. It's one of the few times where he would speak maybe more than Dowdle at a particular point because he's given his take on what he believes the Kinahans are. He says that they want to be the biggest gang in Europe and that for them, it's not just about the money, but the bleeding power as well. He also makes reference to the fact that Daniel Kinahan was dead wide about how he went about things and that they really started to make big money 2 years prior. So that would be 2014. And they were able to grow into the kind of behemoth of an international criminal gang that they did. But I think both men make some ill-fated predictions. I think they may have underestimated the Kinahans somewhat. They speculate at various times that the Kinahans will want peace in the wake of the Regency and the subsequent killings. And obviously the Republicans are going to help facilitate that. But obviously we now know the killing very much continued. Hutch says that the ceasefire would suit Kinahan, who was in a bit of a heap after the Regency, and that for the sake of everyone, it's the best option or go to war. And he says it's in everyone's interest to put it to bed, as it were.
Now, is there more stuff to be listened to in the coming days, starting today, or has that been done? Because what would be really fascinating will be the arguments of the senior counsel, Brendan Graham, for the defence, of course, because Miss Justice Tara Burns has said, let's listen to what we have, and then let's hear the legal arguments as to its admissibility.
Yeah, I think the laying out of the recordings really set the stage quite well for how crucial they really are. Because I think if you're going to compare the prosecution's case to a two-sided coin, the recordings are one crucial side, and then Jonathan Dowdle's evidence is the other. So the prosecution really, really needs this evidence to be admitted, I think, in its case. And obviously, we've heard from Gretchen already. He set out at length that he always refers to the recordings as illicit fruit that has been harvested by the state and should not be admitted. Today, it's all about Sean Gillan, who's the senior counsel for the prosecution, and he's going to set out his stall for why they should be included. Now, I think there might be a bit of back and forth, but then it's all on the judges. They will. So it's Miss Justice Tara Burns, Miss Justice Sarah Berkeley, and Miss Justice Grania Malone. Those three will then go off and make a judgment of that, and they will deliver it in court. And obviously that will be very important to how this case pans out. But then straight after that, it's more drama again, because we expect that we will be going straight into the evidence of Jonathan Dowdle himself.
Yes, and just a point again about the nature of the Special Criminal Court, the absence of a jury. And if you put into that particular setting evidence that is clearly improperly gathered in another jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, obviously the prosecution is going to claim that the evidence wasn't improperly gathered and that the judges
will have... that arguably improperly gathered. And I'm sure that's the case Mr. Brendan Graham is going to make for the defence.
And if it is ruled that evidence was improperly gathered, I think that's going to again look reflect poorly on the state's case against Jerry Hutch, and I feel like the stakes really could be higher in that respect. And again, the cat's out of the bag, as it were, in terms of public consumption, because people can read all about these tapes and what's contained within them, but we could find ourselves in a situation where what's actually on those tapes is not actually considered when the judges come to decide on the guilt or otherwise of Mr. Hutch.
Okay, Sean, it's fascinating on many levels. This particular trial, it's a trial, of course, of Jerry Hutch, Paul Murphy and Jason Bonney. But it is also, in my mind anyway, a bit of a trial for the Special Criminal Court and its working principles, but we'll see about that. I'd just like to say how good your reporting is, Sean, and thank you very, very much.
You're too kind, Eamon. You're too kind.
No, I think the Irish Examiner probably is the best reporters in the country, yourself and Mick Clifford. But thank you very much for talking to us today. We're grateful to Sean, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon. And, of course, we'll come back to this case when there are more developments. We hopefully with Sean. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.